Welcome to Hashtime with Navguzi Chiwanuka. This is a place where we help you unravel social constructs, discuss self-development in line with mental health, emotional well-being, and everything in between that directly or indirectly affects us in the millennial world around us. If you're hearing my voice for the first time and are the kind of person who is not scared of being a better version of yourself, even if it requires you to contradict who you were 24 hours ago, consider this your virtual home. I'm your host, Navguzi Chiwanuka, and I cannot wait to engage with you in the various conversations.
Today is a day for me to be grateful for not having followed my dream of being a doctor, and not because we are going to be discussing science, but because I got into the realm of studying art. And what that meant for me in my A-level was studying history, and one of the best subjects that I loved in school was African history. It was just easy to understand. I don't know if any other person had the same experience, but for me it was just easy. I loved to tell these stories. Of course, back then it was for me to pass my exams, but then come to the university, I started looking at or listening to works from the African perspective, and somehow outside of the university, how many years after? 3 years after my university, I found myself focusing on communication by the podcast and going with the name Navguzi Chiwanuka. And that, to me, trust me, I don't think I am already used to the name, because sometimes I find myself in a position where someone calls my name and I'm like, oh, I kind of feel like I'm blushing, especially when they're like, Nabu. I'm like, oh my God. So it's one of those things. And today's conversation, I'm going to have it with Dennis Obita. He is the founder and president of the Lowell Foundation, which holds the Lowell Convention that is going to happen. The second edition is going to be happening this May, and registration closed, but there is some more information that he shares in this conversation. So without further ado, let's jump into the conversation and hear, where does this dream come from? Why is it important? Why do we have to draw towards culture? So without further ado, let's dive into it. Oh, but before then, this is something that I've not been doing that I feel like it's very important for me to do, is to remind you that Thrivist products are on the market and I need your support. The money that comes in via Thrivist helps run the podcast, and also in the near future, we shall possibly be able to contribute to some therapy sessions for the people that need them but cannot afford them. So support Thrivies and let us give back to community through the podcast, and also give them access to mental health professionals. Let's dive into it.
Obita, welcome to Hashtime with Navguzi Chiwanuka.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a privilege to be in this space.
Why do you consider it a privilege?
Because I have been your ardent follower, and, you know, it seemed so far that to one day be here was a wish for me.
Was a wish for you?
Yeah.
There's a time when I put out calls for people that should be hosted. You should have.
I missed out on that.
Is it?
Yeah. So when you offered me, it was a dream come true.
Honored. I'm short of words. I don't know how to respond to this. But okay, the time is here. Your time to shine is here.
So oh yeah, it's a beautiful space to shine at.
So for those that may not have a single awareness of who the other person is on the other end, please introduce yourself.
You know, first off, thank you for this opportunity. And to be in this space, I am honored and privileged, to be honest. My name is Dennis Obita. And, you know, in my language, we don't have a T. We don't sound the T. So the T gets replaced by an R. And so if you had any Luo call me, it would come out as Obira.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually a T. It's pronounced with an R, but it's a T. And so I'm Obita Obira. I am based out of Toronto, Canada. Luo, And I am humbled to be leading the team that's working to build Luo Foundation and by extension Luo Convention that intends to provide and promote a space for a Luo cultural experience.
Luo cultural experience. So
that, yes, so that's me.
Why? Why do you find it important to be at the helm of this line of work when you talk about, even in your introduction, you found it important for you to mention that you're Luo? If I'd been somewhere, I don't think I would have remembered to make mention of where I come from, I think. I'll just say my name and what I do. But you're going as far as the ethnicity. Why do we have to be invited into the Luo space?
I think my lived experience has made me appreciate the cultural anchoring. And my lived experience here being, you know, having to experience life in a global village, for lack of a better word, the global circle. But it made me appreciate why it's important to always be anchored and have that as a sense of identity. And so I think if I were not to have been in this space that I'm in right now, I probably would not have thought it was important for me to look back, find my anchoring, and proudly associate with it, and by extension, do something to promote it. Yeah, I think the space that I'm in right now brought me that realization that it's important to kind of find out where I am, where I'm from, and hold on to that and make that my identity.
What could have happened? What are we looking at when you say the space that you're in?
You know, like you mentioned at the onset, you say you don't think you'd have identified yourself, you know, with your culture or a tribe. Where I'm at here, you are Black. You know, you're identified by your race, pretty much the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several facets, layers, categories, identities within the black skin identity. And so the systems, processes that exist here that identify you as Black stops at that layer. And so within that Black skin sphere, if you don't have that anchoring that you look back to and say, okay, within the Black space, I am actually Ugandan, you know. Within the Black space, I'm East African. Within this Black space that I've been boxed in, I am this. And so what makes me that?
Mm-hmm.
And so what makes me that unique is my culture. I think that's what's made me in this space be able to look to my culture as that anchoring, as my identity.
And then when you look at your space and what may have inspired you to go as far as identifying or emphasizing the lower side of you, we see people doing this with their children, especially those in the diaspora, let's say. You see it happening in their homes. But now we're having you create a foundation and also have the conversion that is going to happen.
Thank you. The bigger scale is also partly the realization that that sense of identity I experience being in this space, and by this space, let me be categorical, that it's actually the diaspora, that it very easily promotes the erosion of who you are as an identity. And because I experienced that, it was then important to identify something that other persons that exist within this space, that the diaspora, could have the opportunity to actually feel And even if it's just for a moment, to feel, to experience, to identify with who they actually are in this larger diaspora space. And so the foundation seeks to promote, to celebrate, to nurture, and also to preserve the Luo culture in the diaspora.
In the diaspora.
Celebrate it. Yeah, celebrate it, because it's important that you celebrate your culture. Nurture it, especially in the generations that is, the generations that is to come in the diaspora. And to preserve it, that in the context of the space that we exist in, you are still able to preserve what anchors you as your identity, and that's the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And why do you think this kind of identity is important? I would imagine, especially for the people that usually leave, they walk away from the chaos. It's just absurd that we are looking at Africa like this. But most people are running from motherland because of the chaos, and they just, in most cases, you would imagine, where they have found peace, they just want to move with the flow. Why do you find this identity issue important for us to address?
It's, yes, it is, it's chaos, like you, you know, rightly defined it.
Yeah.
But it's another realm of chaos here as well, in some other aspects and spheres of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just a sense of identity, because here you're black, then what? It's just like living in motherland, you would never think of yourself as black.
Right.
Yeah. But when you get here, it's one of those things that hit you first, that you're actually black. You know, and then it's not just your color, it follows and carries you along, you know, many aspects of your actual existence here. And so, you know, within the black box or identity, there's so many different facets, so many layers, so many uniquenesses. And culture is one that will identify and anchor us and provide for us that space to feel that, yes, I'm not just black. I'm Luo. I'm Jamaican. I'm Trinidadian. I'm African American. Because if you do not have that sense of anchoring, then you could be anybody. You could be African American. You could be Jamaican. And then what makes you not Jamaican, but yet still Luo, or yet still black? Mm-hmm. That's where the culture comes in, sorry.
Take us to the time, the first years of being, of having moved to the diaspora. What was it like for you? Because you mentioned the bit where it hit you that you are black. You don't think about that when you're back here. But then you move and then you have a whole new set of knowledge about yourself that you probably were aware of, but it just didn't seem important. So yeah. Take us through your experience, and then also from there is when we shall explore this foundation and the conversion as well.
Well, I think my very first experience was just in a circle of new friends that I had found back in 2015, I think, in the US. And they were describing a colleague. And again, I think that's where the sense of cultural identity came, because in that circle there were white friends, there were African Americans, and then there was me, and we were describing somebody that was Nigerian, and the African American said, "Yes, the black guy," you know, in reference to, and I'm like, "Black? Like, yes, the black guy." Like, okay. And up to that point, I had not seen my color as a sense of identity. Yeah. And so then I realized, okay, so within the black guys, the black guy, there's so many of us.
Mm-hmm.
We have African Americans, we have Jamaicans, we have Africans. Who am I? And what's my identity? I'm dual, yes. Then I'm African, you know, then I'm Ugandan, then I'm a human being. But that's the Luo is what provides me that anchoring. And so how does it then come to the foundation and the convention?
How long did it even take for you to get to that space of feeling like, you know what, we're more than this. It's time for us to make an adjustment. Or what is it? Because I don't know. I'm not so sure if that's the only moment that it felt like, no, we're not going on with this anymore.
All the moments then started coming in like real fast. In every sphere, you're on a train. You're in a black function. Usually the ones that's organized by either the city or the municipal or the government. You're a black function. And then you still find that you don't fit. But then it's made for all of you as a black, as a homogeneous, you know, identity, and then you realize that, okay, you don't fit.
What it is that was lacking? By black, were they looking at only Africans or also including African Americans?
The black identity does not specify if you're African American,
mm-hmm.
or you're actually African. You know, as you're black, you're black. The expectation is that you somehow...
I've had stories about Africans being inferior to to the African Americans.
Well, I've had stories. Yeah, that's it's an experience that you get to have here.
Mm-hmm.
That even within the blacks, there are layers. You know, the lighter skinned are seen with some lens, and it's both ways. They themselves will see as, for lack of a better word, better than a darker one, but then the darker ones also see them as Mzungu shade at them. You know, you throw that Mzungu shade at them, but then you also identify it with your accent, and they know, oh, that's continental. That's how they call us. That's continental black because you've just, you know, you speak, your accent is African.
Mm.
And I think this is just part of the system that's designed to keep us in this confusion. It's like you have white at the center. It's the core. That's where the lava is boiling. Like it's the center. It's the epitome. It's the, let's just call it the center, the epitome of perfection, niceness, smartness, whatever good thing you can throw at it. It's white. And then it starts to move outside. The layer, just the first layer around it, is a lighter skinned. And then there's the other one, and it keeps going like that up to the darkest. And so if the identity is that if the white person that's at the center is the smartest, then it starts to fade as you go on the outer layers. So that's just, but for me, that's just, it's part of racism. It's how the system is designed to appreciate and keep us confused. And so because of that,
uh-huh.
you easily get drawn into that sort of lens of sight, right? And so us that are continental are generally perceived as not as smart as the closer you are to Mzungu, the smarter you are perceived to be, whether in looks or color, complexion, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. We're going as far as the, let's say, the parties that were designated for the blacks, and we are seeing you not still fitting in. What was it that was happening?
It's that sense of still feeling lost in that big black space. Let me throw you one incident. One example is... Jack chicken,
mm-hmm.
It's a Jamaican delicacy. It's identified with the blacks. Like you'd have matoke for the Bantu, right? jerk chicken is, it's assumed that's a black thing. And so at an event, they will have jerk chicken. But I just got to know about it when I'm here. Just because I'm black should not make me appreciate or for you to assume that because I'm black, jerk chicken is my delicacy. So just, it's that kind of thing.
Isn't that one of the dishes on Cafe Java's menu?
Yeah, it's a black dish.
Oh my goodness, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, I've had incidents where my Mzungu colleagues wanting to feel, you know, that we have a vibe, will come and start telling you how, oh, I actually love jerk chicken so much. And so that that's to make you feel like, okay, yeah, he can be, you know, he or she can be my friend because he loves my food. Yeah. So it's that I'm like, okay, let's go back to where we are. So if we have the Luo community experiencing what I'm experiencing, what space can we provide for them to actually feel associated with who they actually are culturally, so that you don't have to pretend to love jerk chicken because it's seen as a black meal here. And so that's how it all started. And then I realized, you know, in each home, they have different experiences. You have Luo homes that do not have the time, but also not maybe even the ability to have their children identify and experience what a true Luo culture should be. And so this convention then becomes that space where these children can come and actually know that I am Luo. And this is what Luo means. I'm black, fine, but I'm actually Luo too. And some have just read books about Luo, but I've not actually experienced it. They know that my parents were Luo from back home, but I don't know what Luo is beyond the books. So what do they eat? And then within the Luo, they are different sub-ethnic communities that make up the Luo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the Acholis, you have the Alus, you have the Jaluos, you have the Jopadola, you have the Anuak, you have, it's quite a number. And the Luo Convention is to provide that space where they identify, see, test what they actually are within the Luo sphere. Yeah.
Do we get to look at those as main objectives of the foundation?
Yes. So the foundation is actually to celebrate, to promote, to preserve, in passing Luo culture, knowledge, and heritage from one generation to the next here in the diaspora is part of preserving that.
And what does it look like for the celebration bit now? Because if you're talking about, especially if you're having the different ethnics, how do you make sure that they are represented?
Thank you. Good question. So the convention experience is such that each sub-ethnic group within the Luo have their own space at the convention,
mm-hmm.
and cook their food, have their cultural artifacts, regalias, dances, dresses, and what makes them that culture, like a history about it. So imagine a trade show where you're moving from one desk or booth or tilt from one to the other. That's how it is set up.
Mm-hmm.
That you'll have their cholis, identifying what food defines them as their cholis. You have the langis identifying, you know, what defines them as a langi. But they all are within the Luo umbrella.
For the time that you have been in the diaspora, how many years is that? 9?
10, 11, 12 actually.
Do you feel like identity has a contribution to someone's ability to move forward in life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no other place from my perspective, there's no other place to experience that than in the diaspora in the Western world, that you have a Black community, call it African-Americans, Black Jamaican, I mean Black Canadian, that you have a Black community whose identity is completely distorted with no sense of, for the most part, no sense of actual belonging that you can trace yourself back to. You don't have a village. You don't have a culture, a tribe. Yeah, and within the culture, you know, whether it's leadership, whether it's experience, whether it's wealth of knowledge in the culture, wisdom, elders, you don't have all that. You are Black, but you are African-American, and that's it. And the fact that coming from the continent, you identify with a part of town where you come from that is predominantly you or people that are akin to you. You can trace back your grandparents, you know, to like 3-4 different generations. You can identify foods. You can identify language. You can identify norms and values that defined you. All those are very, very critical in defining the person that you ultimately become. Mm-hmm. And without that, there's a feeling of you just floating, you know, of, oh, I was born in this apartment, I was born in this town, but you cannot, it's not common that you can go back there and even still see traces of that experience. And while for us, continental, you can go back to your village and still know this is my village, this is what I identify with.
Mm-hmm.
You can come home to that, yeah.
Continental is a new word for me. That's what I'm walking away with. I think I've heard of drinks, alcoholic drinks being called continental. I think one of those cocktails or something. I don't know.
No, so I don't know. Maybe it's coming from that.
I'm like, what? You are now the person leading the Luo Foundation team and then also the Convasion. How easy has it been for you?
It's been as easy as trying to squeeze water out of a rock.
Is it?
Yeah, out of a stone.
Well, it depends on who is speaking. It wasn't complex for Moses.
Yeah, I know. But it's been a challenge, but it's a beautiful experience. It's been very difficult, but it's a beautiful experience. One is that you see the end goal. Two is that it's very easy to speak to and have people join you because you just have to share the end goal with them. But the difficult part has been putting in the hours to sort of get this together. Get it together and give it legs and start to see it walk. Required a lot of time, hours. It's required a lot of resources as well. And working in a space where literally every hour counts, you know, and every hour is costed. Getting that time, it's been taxing. But it's been a beautiful journey in the sense that it's been very easy to sell and get people committed to supporting the cause.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
They phoned Relevance, you didn't have to make so many explanations.
You didn't have to struggle, yeah. You just say, hey, let's come together, let's create this space where you experience your culture. It's been easy in that aspect.
Okay, I actually got to ask you that question to probably give, when you talked about the site where it might be rough, I would wish for you to give us a clear image of how rough it can be. And this is because we're in a generation where I find like we feel we have some sort of self-importance to keep talking about how we're in a generation of startups, yet there are other things that were started in other generations. But let's just take it as that. We are in a generation of startups and we are also seeing a couple of people walking away from their dreams because of possibly how tight things get. So shed more light on that part and then also what keeps you moving.
Yes, I will not dwell on the generation that we are in. You've said enough. But like I say, the goal, the purpose is an easy sell. And for here in the diaspora, as the continental that just came in, have had an experience of, for lack of a better word, let me call it organic, have had an experience of our culture in its pure organic form from back home. And so that's been the point of reference, that you speak to the continental and they realize what their children are and what us who came from the continent experience, and therefore appreciate the importance of having this platform, this space. But the challenge has been also, especially getting the younger people of this generation to appreciate that.
Younger
because
is
you're
like
fighting against.
What age?
Yeah, you're fighting. Say 20 down, 20, 21 down, to appreciate that this is a good space for them. First, they are discovering or have discovered themselves, assimilated or identified with, if I make reference to Jack Chicken, you know what I'm saying now.
they're
comfortable in just being black and being defined and living with the identities that's been built to suit your blackness, that, you know, like a black person has to appreciate Jack Chicken. And so having them then appreciate that they're actually Luo before they are black, as defined here,
mm-hmm.
is the other one. But I think to the largest extent has been us having the resources, and in terms of tangible resources, to help us move this further from where we are is challenging. Because we're distant from the continent. Like, for instance, just having an actual drum that is the continental drum instead of one that's made from here, having those artifacts that you can physically see and have them touch, having resources like knowledge bearers, cultural knowledge bearers that can come and play the role that this actual convention is supposed to, you know, add some of those challenges. It comes with the expenses. If you need to get a good person, you have to fly them from Uganda or from Africa to come and be in the presence. And also here, it's a huge continent. So they will be here for like 3 days and then they have to go back. But as we progress, they are, and also with technology, now there are things we're starting to explore, like Zoom calls. We want to start doing video sessions for learning so that, you know, they keep present. The cultural experience keeps present in the faces of these young children and accessible even at home, where families may otherwise not be able to.
And how many countries have you had so far? From the, what's the difference from the very first convention to what is going to happen in May?
So both conventions are being here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, we had mostly attendance from North America. That's primarily the US and here, Canada. This coming May, we have a whole global excitement, commitment, coming all the way from Australia, from Africa, from South Africa, no, southern part of America, and of course, more numbers from Europe and here in North America as well. You know, we've had like triple or so the number of registration people who have committed to come and attend. We've had to actually change venue to a bigger space just by the fact that many people have expressed interest.
Mm-hmm.
We are having one king from the Luo sub-ethnic communities attend.
Whoa.
In person. Yes.
That's huge. Actually, when I was asking you about the countries, I was looking at the different countries with the Luo communities, because yes, we have Uganda with the Luo community, which I feel like I don't think in Uganda we just generalize people as Luo. I've only found that in Kenya.
Yes.
And it almost makes me wonder. Yeah, exactly. It almost makes me wonder if Kenyans have the tribes within the Luo community. I just know they're Luo.
Yes. Yes. The Kenyans are, they don't have the tribes. They are Luo, the Jaluos. But Uganda, their identity has gone a step lower. You identified with the sub-ethnic tribe within the Luo. That's why you have the Cholis, you have the Luo, the Langis, the Kumams, and that. But they also cross-cut, like the Alus are in the DRC and Uganda, and their king oversees, you know, across those geographical boundaries as well. And he is the one that's coming for the convention. But in terms of countries, if mm-hmm. I'm to speak Africa, we have representations from Ethiopia, from Egypt, from Tanzania, from Kenya, from Uganda.
And how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel that the midnight candles were not burnt in vain, and that we're on the right cause. And at the same time, challenges us to keep, you know, burning some more candles. But the exciting thing is that you actually start to feel that the goal is that you're going to reach that destination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm excited about this, and I'm excited about what it looks like from where I'm standing now, what it looks like in 5 years or 10 years.
You've spoken about the midnight candles being burned. On a scale of 1 to 10, how guilty are you that you have abandoned yourself in making this happen? By abandoning yourself, I'm looking at you not taking care of yourself.
I would say 8. Yeah. If 10 is the highest, 8 it is. Because I think sometimes you just leave all the other aspects of you in autopilot. You know, as long as you've eaten food, drank water, napped for an hour or so, and you keep going. And then looking back in retrospect, that's like, my body was another machine that I was working with, but not actually me, right? Yeah, like that's how reckless or careless I've been in that whole process.
Are you having any plans of making amends, apologizing to yourself?
Oh, yeah. Is you know, it? Yes, absolutely. We'll try. Now I try to just intentionally not turn on my laptop. I get to just sit and watch a game or spend some more time in the gym. You know, there was a time at the peak of that, getting all this together. And even organizing the first convention where you've not entered the gym in 6 months, but you're paying membership on a monthly.
Whoa.
Yeah, because even just 15 minutes is a big thing now. And so you just keep paying it and you can't reach there. Now I try to make sure that, you know, at least once a week I go to the gym. Turn off my phone. That's another big one, you know. Mm-hmm. And because you're working your regular 8-hour shift work, commute in between to and from work. So let's say 10 o'clock, 10 hours. And then you get home, you're exhausted. And before you know it, you're sitting at your desk at home to start work all over again. And as the world is, you should be shutting down on this part of the world, but the other side of the world, the continental, they've just woken up fresh and ready to start engaging you. And so you sit at your desk and before you know it, it's 3 a.m. this side and it's peak work time the other side, and you're engaged and indulged in checking, listening, meetings, you know, consultations and stuff like that. And then you get to bed, say, 4 o'clock, and you have to be up by 6 to start another errand. So, yeah, you easily get sucked into that experience. That's why I say it's probably 8 or even 9.
I feel like that's supposed to be like 9.5 if you're sleeping at 4 and waking up. It's like 9.5.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, there was a time when I had to stop driving as a safety measure, because, you know, a couple of times I'd black out on the highway. Ooh. As I'm driving back from office. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how I passed that spot. I don't remember how I passed that bridge. So I had to stop driving and just use trains to and from work, so I could get to catch a sleep.
Unless you have that part of awareness.
Yeah, it came from a near bad experience. So that's how far it's. But it's exciting that we are in this space right now,
mm-hmm.
With a huge excitement and expectation for the convention coming up in May and going into 2025. Bigger projects anticipated within the Luo Foundation as well. And I'm excited about that. So if all works out well, we'll be coming down to promote it.
And I wish you the very best in it.
Thank you very much.
Is there something that you feel like we may have left out that you feel like we should highlight before we close the conversation?
You know, the question you asked me about, in that scale that you gave me, like how much on a scale of 1 to 10 do you mm-hmm. think you do not pay attention to yourself in the process is a very big one, very important. And most times we just have to look back to see how much risk we took, how much we've neglected ourselves, and should even call yourself in some instance at how you could let that happen. Because given a task, a dream, and an aspiration, we can get so drawn in and buried in that nothing else starts to make sense except pursuing that wholly. And in that process, we'll very easily forget that you actually need this body right and fit to be able to get to that dream yet you're wholly consumed in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's happened to me. And now I try to be more aware that this is actually the center. Without it, I will not even get to my dream. And so I need to make sure that I take better care of it mentally, emotionally. And that includes the work-life balance, like they call it. But I know that for the most part, all of us, you know, in hot pursuit for dreams such as these that I've been involved in, you forget a meal, you'll forget sleep, you will forget to check in with friends, you will just do just about nothing else except that. And then sadly, sometimes we'll not enjoy that dream once we've got into the destination because your body is so battered to even feel the excitement that comes with having reached there. Now I'm well aware of that. Do I practice it? That's for another day.
Have you planned out a holiday at least when the convention is done?
No, I haven't been on a holiday for 6-7 years.
Do you at least have a self-rewarding system?
I've only recently started to learn that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm very traditional, but... It wasn't in me. It felt like this is a strange thing people do.
Yeah.
I should just keep going until I achieve that end. But now I've recently started to appreciate that. I'll go to the gym, like just turn off my phone and go to the gym and chill. That's my reward. For whatever work I will have done, I will go have a nice meal. I'll go buy myself something that I like. I'm into electronics, so when I get a nice phone, no, not a nice phone, like a nice watch or nice headphone or earphones, yeah, things like those. If that's self-rewarding, then that's what it is that I do.
It does. It does fall in that category. And what message would you love to leave the listener? What do you want the listener to walk away with?
That we have to be more intent, actually at all times aware, whatever you're putting your mind to, your pursuit, your goal, your dream, your aspiration, there's one thing that is the only thing that can get you there, and that's you. And it's the whole of you, you know, your mind, your physical body, your emotions. It's the only thing that will get you there. And so you have to make sure that it's in good shape and take care of it. You know, the money will come and go. If it's a laptop you're using, it will come and go. You know, if it's time, it will come and go. But your body has to be the, it's the only thing that will carry you there. So you've got to take care of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dennis.
And then also listen to the hashtag podcast. That's another thing that will get you there.
Thank you. For context, people might be interested, might derive interest from the podcast to attend the Law Convention. I think it's important for us to let people know that registration closed. Registration closed a very long time ago.
2024 is closed. We will be starting registration for the 2025 experience in June. The Luo Convention is a Luo experience, but we more than welcome people who want to know, understand, and experience Luo that are not Luo by cultural identity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you love culture, you want to see what the Luo do, how they dance, how they eat food, what do they value and appreciate, you are more than welcome to the convention. We have something else that's coming up. We'll have, if I get the opportunity to come back to this space, I'll be talking about it. That's coming up for 2025. But registrations will be opened for the 2025 experience in June. However, if you are in a visa exempt country, say you're in North America or in Europe or in Australia, where you don't need a visa to come to Canada, you know, you can come that day. Just get on the plane and come and get a feel. We'll be at the Woodbine Banquet and Convention Center in Toronto. Yeah, and it's a beautiful space. And I look forward to hosting the world and introducing the world to Luo and Luo culture.
You talked about the people that might be visa exempt. Are you trying to say that they can just walk in without them paying that day?
Oh, no. I mean, they don't need to go through the process of applying for a visa and waiting for a visa to come to Canada. They will just walk in and register at the door.
All right. Thank you so much, Dennis.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for the work that you do. Thank you. It's been a pleasure hosting you.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us, Dennis and I, to the very end. If you have loved the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button wherever you have listened to the podcast from. It's available on all podcast platforms. We are still mourning Google Podcasts. They closed, I think, last week or this week. Last week, I think, yeah. They closed business, so it's no longer one of those platforms where we push people to go and listen or subscribe to the podcast. So look for other available podcast platforms. We are new on YouTube. We are available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Castbox, and every other podcast platform that you can think about. Also, feel free to share your insights about what connected with you on social media and be sure to tag us. We are at #WeNavGuziChwanuka on Instagram and Facebook, and on Twitter, our handle is at HTNKPodcast. Or you can even use the hashtag HTNKInsation or HTNKPodcast. I look forward to hearing from you. Give us your perspectives. What culture are you ready to celebrate? Or even tell us if you're going to be joining the Luo Convention. Happy Eid.